You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. A new report by the Vera Institute of Justice says that violent crime rates are down 49%, property crime down 44% from their highest point in 20 years. Sounds like good news. The report says, though, there is more to the story.
Despite the lower crime rates, annual admissions to jails nearly doubled in the 30-year time span between 1983 and 2013. Of those who are jailed, nearly 75% of them are there for traffic or other nonviolent offenses.
Fred Patrick is with us. He's the director of the Center for Sentencing and Corrections at the Vera Institute of Justice. Fred, thanks for joining us today.
Good afternoon, Rob. Good to be here.
Well, I want to start off. A lot of times people, and I'll include myself in this, use jail and prison almost like synonyms. You're focusing on jails here. Can you just explain the distinction to start things off?
Sure. Well, jails are part of the front end part of the system. So when individuals are arrested and charged with committing a crime, they're often then put in jail, whereas prisons are for sentenced individuals. Once an individual has been adjudicated and found guilty, those individuals are then in prison. Jails, by and large, hold folks who are considered pretrial, so their case is still being adjudicated by the courts.
So explain the story behind the numbers. These violent crimes are down, property crimes are down, but more people finding themselves in jail at some point in any given year.
So what we found is there's been an increasing overuse of jails in the sense that we now have almost 12 million admissions annually to jail, 11.7 to be exact. And that's almost 20 times the number of prison admissions, which is essentially the equivalent of the populations of Los Angeles and New York City combined. So in addition to the 11.7 million admissions, and by the way, some of those are repeat, what we call frequent flyer individuals, but in addition to too many folks, there's the issue of folks being there too long. The average length of stay has increased from an average of 14 days in 1983 to 23 days in 2013. And one of the problems with that is even a short stay in jail of a couple of days can be very harmful. It can be disruptive to family. It, as you can imagine, it could cause the loss of jobs, so reducing economic viability. There's research that suggests that it promotes future criminal behavior, and that individuals who spend even a few days in jail are more likely to receive a sentence and to receive a longer sentence if, in fact, they're later adjudicated as guilty and sentenced to prison.
So you can see if someone's committed a violent crime, why they might be kept in jail while awaiting trial if they're seen as a threat for more violence. But your report says that a lot of non-violent crimes, drug offenses, property offenses, even traffic ordinance violations are leading people to be in jail. How common is that?
Very common. Nearly 75% of the population of both sentenced offenders, those who are sentenced to jail time, which is generally a year or less, as well as pretrial detainees, are nonviolent. That is, nonviolent traffic, property, drug, and public order offenses. So essentially, jails are becoming warehouses for mentally ill individuals who act out publicly, for whom mental health treatment and other diversionary programs would be useful. And importantly, increasingly, people are being held there simply for their inability to pay bail, because bail now is being overused. And so we've moved away from the real intended purpose of jail, which was to detain those who would be viewed as a danger to the public or a flight risk.
Well, I want to take each of those in turn. People with mental illness. Why are we finding so many people with mental illness in our jails?
Well, you do have some jurisdictions that have begun to think about ways to deal with mentally ill individuals other than through the criminal justice system. But what you found sort of nationally is, over time, the criminal justice response has become the primary response to dealing with mentally ill individuals who are, maybe engaged in things that sort of create a public disorder concerns. And so as states nationally over the years sort of reduced the amount of funding and support for mental health resources, the criminal justice response kicked in. And so as a result, in many places, jails, have become a surrogate mental health system. And one of the things that we're hoping to do through the MacArthur Foundation Safety and Justice Challenge is to get jurisdictions to begin to focus on, again, the the real purpose of jails in terms of addressing flight risk and public safety issues, and finding ways through mental health courts, through diversion programs, but finding better ways to deal with essentially public health issues.
Are there jails in the country that are trying to provide some kind of mental health treatment for the inmates as they come in?
Yeah, so in Kings County, Washington, which is Seattle, there's the Law Enforcement Assistant Diversion Program, which seeks to divert low-level drug and other offenders to community-based services. And I'm sure there are other examples out there. One of the things we want to do through the MacArthur Safety and Justice Challenge is to, again, because it's about the local reform efforts, is to get jurisdictions to begin to think about policing strategies, prosecution, jails, mental health systems, service providers, and how they can sort of look at their population, do a real analysis of who's coming in the front door, what are the underlying mental health and other issues that could be addressed outside of the criminal justice system, and not just addressed, but actually addressed more appropriately in a way that also further enhances public safety.
Now let's turn to the poverty side of this equation. You said low-income people are overrepresented in our jails, in part because of bail. So something that might be considered, in terms of bail, a very low bail, $500, might be unpayable for some people.
Absolutely. As an example, in New York City in 2012, 31% of the non-felony defendants confined in the jails until the cases were resolved were being held on bails of less than $500.
So
again, people who are, being taken away from families, possibly having employment disrupted due to $500, essentially.
So is
and by the way, those folks may not necessarily be, if you were using sort of accurate risk assessment tools, it doesn't impute that those individuals are flight risk or are a danger to the public.
Is there any kind of movement to move away from even these low bails that someone can't afford if, as you say, they're not a flight risk, they're not seen as a threat?
Yeah, a great example of that is Kentucky. Kentucky has a statewide agency that uses a locally validated risk assessment instrument to assess all defendants, and it has allowed the court to release 70% of all of their defendants pretrial, with only 4% requiring bail. And just importantly, just 8% of the defendants released without bail were rearrested during the pretrial period, and only 10% missed a court date.
Now, there's been a lot of attention to income inequality, wealth inequality. Do you see this disproportionate jail population being low income as reinforcing these problems that we already see in the country?
Absolutely. When you look at, disadvantaged communities, also tend to be places where, some people might argue that there's over-policing. And so ultimately, the racial disparity picture does, sort of get incorporated into the jails. It's not limited to, just the prison system. There's a lot of focus on the overuse of prisons, often called mass incarceration, but it really starts at the jails and thus the name, jails being the front door of sort of overuse of incarceration.
So we're seeing our jail populations nearly doubling, according to your report. I'm guessing there was never a policy decision at a national level saying, we need more people having stays in jail. How do we get here?
A cumulative effect. I mean, it actually, not unlike, some of the decisions that have led to, that led to the tremendous growth in the prison population. So get tough on crime era, starting in the 80s and 90s. A key point on the jail side is, prosecutors, play a huge role in the jail system, in terms of charging decisions and in terms of what they recommend to courts, that in terms of what judges may or may not impose as bail. And so, to the extent that many local prosecutors and sheriffs are also elected officials, you have the overlay of electoral politics and that sort of get tough on crime stuff that plays out in that regard. But no, so it wasn't necessarily sort of a 12 men in a room, so to speak, saying this is what we're going to do. But I think as the nation began to increasingly use punishment and the criminal justice system to deal with a whole, array of societal issues, this is one of the horrendous effects of it.
We're talking with Fred Patrick about a new report from the Vera Institute of Justice about what they call the misuse of jails in America.
Yeah, we'd like to hear from you. Have you seen this in action? Have you or someone you know been in jail for a nonviolent offense? If you are in the court or law enforcement system, do you think we're sending too many people to jail? What responsibility do you believe local policymakers have on improving conditions in jails? Let us know at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. We're talking about a new report from the Vera Institute of Justice saying that America's jails are being misused. Our guest is Fred Patrick, Director of Sentencing and Corrections at the Vera Institute.
We want to know what you think. Do you think the United States is filled with what's being called debtor's prisons, with too many low-income people stuck, maybe with bail they can't pay? What is the solution in your mind? What questions do you have about this report? And do you have an experience as an inmate, as somebody who works in a jail or in law or a social worker? Share your thoughts and experiences at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email talk@wpr.org. Fred, before we get to the calls, you've mentioned the consequences for the people who go to jail, more likely to end up in prison down the road. How about the costs to taxpayers of housing these people in jail for such a long period of time?
Absolutely. So we spend, as a nation, $60 billion annually on corrections. $22.2 billion of that, more than a third, is spent by local jurisdictions, essentially on jails. And so, you know, at a time in which we want to think about better use of public dollars to deal with other public policy preferences, spending way too much on jails. So in short, you know, too many people are in for too long. It's too expensive. It's not being used for the intended purpose. And it has very harmful effects in terms of a disruption of livelihoods.
Let's go to a caller. We've got Steve on the line in Dubuque, Iowa. Steve, hi.
Hi. How you doing?
Good. What'd you want to bring up?
I had an experience myself, and I was pulled over for driving without a license. They were gonna put me in jail for it. I managed to kind of talk my way out of it. My point is, the driving without a license was due to an OWI that I've been fighting for 13 years, through the state of Michigan. And my opinion about it is, I think it's a business for them. And I think they're counting on the revenue, of this. And, they really don't want to not have us go to jail. You know, they're making money off of us.
Steve, thanks a lot for the call. Aside from the particulars of Steve's experience, Fred, is this common that people might find themselves in jail due to various traffic-related offenses, like driving without a license in this case?
Sure. You know, as I mentioned previously, you know, traffic offenses, nonviolent property, drug, public order offenses, those are, you know, in the main, lots of reasons why folks will find themselves increasingly in jail. And there are places where, you know, commercial bail is also a huge issue. And again, I want to point out that the wonderful thing about the MacArthur Foundation Safety and Justice Challenge is we're going to be seeking to identify 20 jurisdictions who are willing to really roll up their sleeves and put some serious thought and planning and do some data-driven analysis around how the system can reform to use evidence-based practices to reduce the number of folks who are unnecessarily in jail. And so we're very hopeful that we are at a time and place. And again, this MacArthur Initiative is a 5-year, $75 million initial investment in local reform. I think that's huge. And so far, the interest from local jurisdictions has been terrific. So I think we're at a time and place, notwithstanding the significance of the problem, but we're at a time and place now where help is on the way. And the goal with this Safety and Justice Challenge and the Safety and Justice Network that'll come about is to really inform a national conversation. So beyond just the 20 jurisdictions, and then ultimately the 10 jurisdictions that will get even more significant funding, would be the notion of having a nationwide discussion on the overuse of jails and looking to reform, city by city, county by county, our practices.
So you would be recruiting, getting applications, I guess, from cities, counties, anybody who has a jail with some kind of idea for a model project to tackle this problem?
Absolutely right. So looking for better ways of targeting resources, more effective risk assessments, looking at all aspects of the local criminal justice system, from policing, prosecutors, judges, defenders, policymakers, academia. So really looking for the best and brightest mind and asking jurisdictions to apply to be a part of the Safety and Justice Challenge, and working with national organizations, in addition to MacArthur, organizations like VERA and Center for Court Innovation and others, around how we can sort of fix this huge and growing problem.
We're talking about a report from the VERA Institute with Fred Patrick, saying we are overusing, misusing our jail system here in the United States. We'll go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. We've got Mike with us in Madison. Mike, hi.
Hi. Yes, so I've had several friends of mine commit suicide in prison. Most of them were charged with minor drug charges. We were all a bunch of deadheads traveling around watching The Grateful Dead, and they got busted with small amounts of drugs. I'm talking small amounts of drugs, things that they would laugh away at now. But back in the zero tolerance days, they wanted to make an example of people. So, for example, a friend of mine got busted with 5 hits of LSD, and his defense attorney sold him out completely, did nothing for him at all. He served the maximum penalty of his time, which was the full 5 years at the time. And right before his release, he didn't get out, right before his release, he committed suicide rather than continually being beaten and raped. And I used to go and visit him every few months, and every few months I'd go visit him, and it's got worse and worse and worse. And there's absolutely nothing we on the outside can do to help them in any way, shape, or form. But once again, this happened to several friends of mine.
Mike, I want to get Fred Patrick in on this. Sorry for the loss of your friends. Mike's friends, Fred, ended up in prison. In this jail report, are we seeing, again, low-level drug offenses leading to a lot of people spending hours, days, maybe weeks in jail?
So again, I think one of the purposes of this very initiative in terms of what we can do about situations like that is to begin to look at who really needs to be in jail in the first instance, right? So Mike, and my condolences, is talking about someone who ultimately made it to prison. And what we find is that individuals who spend even a few days in jail, many of whom don't need to be there, are far more likely to end up with an incarcerative sentence in prison and are likely to have a longer stay. That's what the research suggests. And so the goal would be sort of doing enough analysis and thinking and planning on the front end so that people who don't need to be in jail, so for in this instance, it could be that that individual could have been better served and society could have been better served had that person been diverted into drug treatment. And that's what this Safety and Justice Challenge is really all about, having jurisdictions sort of think about using the data, thinking about how to sort of reform a system that, again, brings into play the appropriate service providers who may do a better job at responding than the criminal justice system. And so maybe you avoid low-level, nonviolent drug offenders ending up in prison in the first place.
We had a caller named Carol who couldn't stay on the line, said she'd had a friend repeatedly end up in jail without charges ever being applied, without ever being charged with anything. Is that a common situation at our jails?
And repeat that again. So someone repeatedly...
People ending up in jail but never actually being charged with a crime, never ending up in court.
Well, I mean, I don't have the data on that. But again, one of the things we want to do through the Safety and Justice Challenge is to bring all of the parties to the table. So you want to look at things like arrest, booking, charging, all of those decisions, and look at things like time, from arrest to arraignment, time before charge, how long are people languishing in jails before they're even allowed to see a judge or before charges are brought. So this Safety and Justice Challenge would really begin to sort of unearth and tease out all of that data, which is where you begin to kind of figure out what are the decision points in the system that need to be worked on.
So as we wrap up, Fred, you've got this report out. What has been the response from stakeholders here, people maybe who are setting these policies regarding jails?
So it's been enormous. You know, we've had early indications that jurisdictions are interested and are going to the website and looking at the application. And so we're hopeful that there will be lots of applicants for us to choose from, for the MacArthur Foundation to choose from in partnership with the other Challenge Network members. Also, there's been enormous media interest and attention. And I think that if you think about it, what the MacArthur Foundation was hoping to do and what Vera was hoping to do via the report is to put front and center the fact that jails are indeed the front door in terms of overuse of incarceration, and that jails had been largely overlooked until now.
And we're going to leave it there. Thanks to Fred Patrick, Director of Sentencing and Corrections at the Vera Institute for Justice.